Greetings, friends. I hope that you are all keeping well in these strange and uncertain times that we are journeying through. Today I'm going to be reflecting on the parable of the prodigal son from the perspective of the inner journey. And this is a talk that I gave at the Dove Fellowship a while ago, but it's an image that keeps coming back for me, so I want to revisit it with you in this talk. On the contemplative journey, one has a gradual shift in the sense of where God is to be found. Most of us grew up with a clear sense of God out there, beckoning us on a journey to someplace else, who calls us to reach beyond ourselves in some way, to some improved model of who we are, and to some future where we are more worthy and radiant, and this we called becoming Christ-like. And the shift that takes place on the inner journey is to a sense of God as the indwelling presence, the treasure hidden in the field of our lives, of our very beings, the pearl of great price, who is nearer to us than our own breathing. And for me personally, this shift in the sense of where God is to be found has taken a long time, because my dualistic sense of God out there was so ingrained. But together with this has come a dawning recognition of this as the reality at the heart of every human being, regardless of race, religion, morality, or worthiness. God is the center of us all, the radiant source from within, who breath by breath is the very reason for our being at all. James Finlay talks about the soul as your God-given godly nature, which is the infinite reality of who you are. And he makes this radical statement: you're worth all that God is worth. You are as precious as God is precious. And this goes for each and every one of us, living, breathing beings. You have a value that cannot be calculated. And this is already the case. It's not something that you have to strive for or achieve. Martin Laird writes it this way: union with God is not something we acquire by a technique, but the grounding truth of our lives that engenders the very search for God. He goes on to say, because God is the ground of our being, the relationship between creature and creator is such that by sheer grace, separation is not possible. And then he says it this way: God does not know how to be absent. I love that. God does not know how to be absent. However, our lived experience is not one of abiding union with God. Somehow we have left the building. God is always at home in the depths of our beings. But it is we who have wandered far from home and are trapped in divisions where there are none. And this is where I find the story of the prodigal son an incredibly helpful parable from the perspective of the inner journey, the call to return home to God in our depths, to God at the center of our beings. So I'm going to read this parable. I'm also going to paste it below this video on the website. And so I encourage you to spend some time with it on your own, listening to the parable from this inner perspective. And you can listen as I read it through, and then pause for a while to reflect on it, or you could pause right now and read it first for yourself and spend some time hearing something fresh from this parable with this perspective in mind. But let me read this. It's from Luke 15, verse 11 to 32. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have good food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For the son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" So reflecting on the younger son, he had a strong urge for independence, to assert his own choice in how he lived his life, and went about it in a typical young person kind of way. Party, party, party. And part of this would have been a quest for popularity, happiness, and social success. It's easy to look at that from a distance, not quite identifying ourselves with this wild, self-centered young man. But in some respects, we're all like this prodigal. We have all wandered far from home and are continually doing so. Every time we get wrapped up in some kind of identity or role, some narrative about ourselves and others, every time we're pulled off into the virtual reality of our minds that just go on and on, ruminating over the past, projecting into the future. Anytime we are not present in this life, right here, right now, we have left home. We get so caught up in our collective interpretations of life that we've become used to this alienated state of being. We think of it as normal, but really, we're like this prodigal who's got caught up in the bright lights and temporary highs of society's game, with the stuck social patterns that we get hooked into in trying to keep our approval ratings up and in trying to satisfy our unspoken inner cravings, and to quell our haunting fear of irrelevance or rejection. Unfortunately, the satisfaction that we find from wandering off like this and our sense of our popularity never lasts for long. Life has this habit of swinging from times of plenty to times of famine. And if the outer identity is what we have believed and invested in, then when the famine strikes, when what we receive is failure instead of success, blame instead of praise, rejection instead of approval, loss in place of gain, we feel utterly lost because we've become hollowed out by so many years of believing that version of who we are. But these times of devastation are crucial to our deeper sense of well-being and to the journey of recovery of our deeper identity in God. Like the prodigal, it takes failure, shame, and loss to wake us up and reveal to us the emptiness of these outer identities and the pursuits that they drive us to. Interestingly, the son's decision to return home was made for purely selfish reasons, not to bring gladness to his father's heart or to try to restore what he had squandered, but simply because he knew he would have a better life there. And there's a touching reality in this. Who of us would ever embark on the deeper journey home to God if it weren't because we somehow have a sense that it will benefit us in some way? We are called home by the instinctual longing for inner nourishment, love, safety, and well-being. And this longing draws us, slowly at first, but with ever-increasing urgency. And Llewellyn Vaughan Lee is a teacher of Sufi mysticism, and he writes beautifully about the longing that draws us from within. He wrote, "There are many people who feel the unhappiness of a homesick soul and yet do not know its cause. They do not realize the wonder of their pain, that it is their heart's longing that will take them home." He goes on to write, "The heart longs for God and seeks to find its true beloved. If we follow our longing, if we allow ourselves to be pierced by the pain of separation from the source, we will be drawn back to God." That is beautifully expressed. And so we begin the long, arduous journey home. On the one hand, it is long and arduous, and on the other hand, it is already here within us, and it's somehow those two are always in balance. But like the prodigal son, we've wandered far off to distant lands, and so the return journey is inevitably painstaking and slow going, and requires some discipline and conscious choice. We've been so caught up in the sticky web of our self-constructed identities, the incessant verbiage of our thoughts and the virtual reality that this weaves, and the consuming busyness of our doing, doing, doing. And all of this keeps us stuck at the surface level of our lives. That's where this time of lockdown has been an opportunity to recognize some of the thinness of the doings that we've been so caught up in. And some of us may have heard more deeply this call to return home in a time in our lives that's unusual and where we're out of our usual doing comfort zones. But there's a beautiful question that James Finlay asks. Why do we spend so many of our waking hours on the outer circumference of the inner richness that is our lives? Such a good question. It's because we've spent so much of our time at this level, identifying with the many versions of who we are that we project out there, that it takes a long time for us to learn to let that go and to move deeper, to still the voices that shout our agreement or opposition out there, the projections of who we are, the strategies to control reality and to make people like us. Just watch your thoughts and you'll see how much time you spend trying to second guess of what are people thinking of me? Are they approving? Are they disapproving? On and on and on it goes. And so it takes time to return to the simple immediacy of who we are without all these layers. And this is the self that is already and always home and knows that it's home. Some of you will know this experience and some of you may have caught glimmers of it, just the sense of utter well-being and simply being who and where we are, held right here, right now, in this presence who's never left the building, the I Am Present One, our beloved. But for me, this returning is a daily struggle because these voices so quickly take over. And the letting go is painstaking, gradual work of disidentification. And that's where I need a regular daily practice. And for me, it's of centering prayer. Without it, I get caught up again and again in the religion of me and my and wander far off from home. The journey within also necessarily involves a sense of emptiness and lostness, because it is our self-certainty that has to go as we are led through completely unknown territory, often seemingly empty and barren, to discover the inner richness of home. And in this story, I love this depiction of the father who waits anxiously but patiently for his son to return home. He does not go out and grab him by force. He waits for the awakening that will bring his son to his senses. And recently I've been finding it very moving to reflect on the image of God, my loving parent, waiting patiently at the core of my being, longing for me to wake up from the places that I've lost myself in false identities and cheap thrills. The parent recognizes my tentative steps of return and rushes out to meet me. No blame. Never blame. No withholding. Only grace, warmth and delight, and generosity with abandon. At the same time, on the homeward journey, we are invariably met by the judging sibling. Who is inside of us. It's another part of us. It's another insistent voice in our heads asking, who are you to return so cheaply? And so we quickly turn on ourselves, blaming ourselves for our mistakes, adding to all the voices of shame and blame that we have internalized. And this can add even more sticky layers to the voices of separation that keep us from finding our way home. A warning here is that it is the sibling's own resentment and bitterness and urge to draw lines of exclusion that keeps him from really being at home, even though he lives there. And this is another typical example of the ego voices that go on in our head. But I love the acceptance, patience, and open invitation that the father shows to this sibling too. This is so important. Rather than starting a new war with these bitter and accusing voices in our heads, whether they are coming at us from others or from our own memories, our minds turning in on ourselves, it's helpful to realize that even the judging sibling in us is invited to the celebration. reminded of their belonging and the excessive generosity of the host. There's room for every part of us, the bitter, the judgmental, the excluding. All of them should be integrated and welcomed, allowed to find home, and then the bitterness might eventually dissolve as we become more and more whole and at home and join the celebration. And it's this unconditional generosity for the whole of who we are that if we receive it with the humility of a returning prodigal, melts our hearts open and helps us to drop our boundaries of separation and bitterness towards ourselves and towards others. And this is how the heart opens, beginning with ourselves, who we've turned against so much time and time again. And as we can start to make room for all of these parts, we discover the spaciousness of heart that can make room for others and all of who they are. And then in this story, there's a secret messenger that is not told about, but is there throughout. And as a prodigal myself, I know that I would never even consider homecoming, let alone find my way back there, were it not for the grace, accompaniment, and gentle guidance of the Spirit. The Ruach is there with the prodigal all along, no matter how far he has wandered from home. She's in the winds of disturbance that trouble him at night with those tiny, frightening questions, even at his most popular and glamorous party times. Those questions would have been there. She's the gentle whisper that reminds him of the steady warmth and nourishment of home and the faithful embrace of the Father. She accompanies him through the long journey home, reminding him that he's returning to a loving Father who will not turn him away. A description in Isaiah 42 captures this accompaniment of the Spirit for me. I will lead the blind by ways they have not known. Along unfamiliar paths I will guide them. I will turn the darkness into light before them and make the rough places smooth. These are the things I will do. I will not forsake them. And another passage that comes to mind is Isaiah 30, verse 21 and 22. Although the Lord gives you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, your teachers will not be hidden. Your teachers will be hidden no more. With your own eyes you will see them. Whether you turn to the right or to the left, your ears will hear a voice behind you saying, "This is the way. Walk in it." In this homecoming, we are reminded of our identity as the beloveds of God. Henri Nouwen was one of the most powerful writers on this, and so I'll end this talk with his words. There is that voice, the voice that speaks from above and from within, and that whispers softly or declares loudly, "You are my beloved, on you my favor rests." Listening to that voice with great inner attentiveness, I hear at my center words that say, "I have called you by name from the very beginning. You are mine and I am yours. I have molded you in the depths of the earth and knitted you together in your mother's womb. I look at you with infinite tenderness and care for you with a care more intimate than that of a mother for her child. Nothing will ever separate us. We are one."